People pursue happiness, but they pursue it usually in all the wrong ways and in all the wrong places. The result of such a pursuit of happiness in the wrong ways and the wrong places is that they usually fail to find happiness. In fact, they often hurt themselves and others in their pursuit of happiness. They often end up sadder rather than happier. Indeed, many even despair after many years of pursuing happiness and failing to find it. They give up and say, well, this is impossible. I will never be happy. Is it even worth living? I have to be honest, that was true for me. In my teens and early 20s, I was pursuing happiness in all the wrong ways and all the wrong places. And yes, I failed. I hurt myself. I hurt others. I became sadder and eventually really came close to despairing that finding happiness was possible in this world. But though I didn't find happiness, thankfully God found me. And God help me find happiness in Him. And for 30 years now, through many ups and downs, some trials and tests, He has proven to be a reliable source of joy. And I could tell you more of my story, but maybe that can wait for another time. I'd like us to hear God's story tonight in these verses, His illustration of His happiness as we find it here. As you know, we've been looking at the reasons to enroll in Wisdom University. God doesn't just call us to enroll, but it gives us reasons. He gives us motives. We've looked at the moral or spiritual benefits. We've looked at the material benefits. And this evening, we'd like to look at the emotional benefits of Wisdom University. And remember, when we're talking about Wisdom University, we're talking about the school of Christ. He is God's wisdom. He is the one who is teaching us through this book. And it's a big subject, Christian happiness, which is the emotion we'd like to focus on, because that's what this passage focuses on. And as I began to study for this sermon, I realized there was more material than I could possibly fit into one sermon. So I've divided it up into three at the moment, at least. And I think it's providential, because if there's something we need in these sad days, it's to find happiness in God and in His gospel. And there's plenty of material here to help us. So I'd like us to look this evening at this subject, God approves the pursuit of happiness. Secondly, the next time we look at this passage of God spares us, we want to look at how God redirects the pursuit of happiness. And then thirdly, we'd like to look at how God satisfies the pursuit of happiness. And one of the reasons I want to split it up and spend a wee bit more time on it is because it's a very misunderstood subject. And there are extremes on both sides. There are those who make a god out of happiness, even in the Christian church. And there are others who go to the other extreme and are very, very suspicious of happiness because it's so abused by others. And we want to find the biblical way to look at this. And remember, we gave some qualifications about reading the book of Proverbs the last time we were together. And one of them was, wisdom usually results in a better life in the long run. Remember that word, usually. In general, this will happen, but there are exceptions. And bear that in mind as we look at this subject. But I want to look, first of all, at God gave the desire for happiness. God gave the desire for happiness. A lot of Christians are suspicious of happiness, the desire for it. And they have questions like, is it from God or is it from the devil? Is it godly or is it worldly? Is it something to be pursued and fanned into flame, or is it something to be repented of and doused with repentance? I want to try and answer that question by looking at this first question. I want to try and figure out, should we speak of being blessed or being happy? Being blessed or being happy? And I say that because if you look at verse 13, it says, blessed is the man who finds wisdom. And then again in verse 18, speaking of wisdom, she's a tree of life to those who embrace her, those who lay hold of her will be blessed. Now, the word behind this word blessed is the same word that's translated in other parts of the Bible as happy. And indeed, some translations of the Bible translate the words in verse 13 and verse 18 as happy. So that raises a question. Are they the same thing? Are they different? Well, they are different, although there's some crossover. When we think of being blessed, that's something more objective. It's something factual that is independent of our feelings. It's often been described as something God does. He stamps his approval upon us. So regardless of whether we feel that stamp, we're aware of it, he has stamped blessed. I approve. That's a factual, objective state. Happy, on the other hand, is much more subjective. It's more feelings-based. It's something we experience in our emotions. Now, somebody can be blessed without being happy, and somebody can be happy without being blessed. But what we'll find is that the students in Wisdom University are both blessed and happy. But we're still left with the question, what's the best way to look at this passage? Well, as usual when we approach the Bible, the context of words is our biggest help for understanding. So our question is, when we look at verse 13, blessed, verse 18, blessed, what's the context? Well, if we look at verse 12, the immediate verse before verse 13, it talks about the Lord's love and the Father's delight, which is more in the realm of subjective. And therefore, verse 13 is more likely to be a subjective follow-on. Happy, therefore, is the man who finds wisdom. And it's the same in verse 18. Again, we look at the immediately preceding verse, 17, that says, her ways are pleasant ways, all her paths are peace. And that word pleasant means pleasurable and profitable. So again, when we come to verse 18, it's much more likely that the blessed is really, better put, happy. So we have happy here then in verse 13, we have happy in verse 18, and certainly verse 17 is all about pleasure, pleasantness, happiness. So that's one question we put aside. Blessed or happy? We're going with happy. Second question is, maybe the biggest question is this idea of happiness from God or from the devil? Now, everyone agrees that just about everyone in the world wants to be happy and pursues it. It doesn't matter what country you go to, what culture you visit, what century you look at. The vast majority, like 99.999% of people, what motivates them is, I want to be happy. In fact, if there are such people in the world who live to be miserable, usually there's something wrong with them. It's some kind of disorder. It's unnatural. It's unusual. No one wakes up really surely who's in their right mind and says, how can I be sad today? Indeed, if you asked anybody out in the world as they go about their daily business, why do you do what you do? Ultimately, you would get to that answer, because I want to be happy. If you're asking somebody as they work or as they play sport or as they build a business or as they work in their yard, why do you do what you do? And they might give other answers first, like, well, I want to be rich, or I want a nice house, or I want to be fit. But then if you ask them next, and why do you want that? And you kept asking, eventually you'd get to the rock bottom fundamental desire of the human heart, which is, I want to be happy. So the question is, who gave that? Is that God-given or is that devil-given? Is this godly or sinful? Is this pre-fall or post-fall? Is this something to be cultivated or something to be crushed? I was reading, or actually I was hearing of a pastor recently who was giving a list of the sins for why God had cursed the world with this virus. And hard to believe, but the first sin that he listed was the number of Reformed Christian books about happiness. As the author of The Happy Christian, I was pretty worried that I was maybe the cause of the coronavirus. Clearly somebody who believes happiness is of the devil, something to be avoided, something to be shunned. Well, as I'm sure anyone who knows their Bible well knows, that is such a dishonoring of a God-given gift. God gave the desire for happiness. He created humanity with the capacity for happiness, the ability to be happy, and the desire for happiness. It's central to being human. Indeed, I would argue it's part of the image of God in man. God is the ever-blessed, the ever-happy God, and he made us in his image. And so, thankfully, this is one of the good things God left in the world after the fall. He could have, at the fall, taken away the ability to be happy, the desire to be happy, the possibility of happiness. Can you imagine what a world that would be like? But no, in his mercy, he left it. Now, true, we warp it, and we twist it, and we redirect it in all the wrong ways, and we'll come back to that, but it's still the desire, the capacity, and the ability is from our ever-blessed, ever-happy God. So God gave the desire for happiness. What does that mean for us? Well, I think first of all, it brings us to adore God, to worship God. 1 Timothy 1 verse 11 speaks of the blessed gospel of the blessed God. And it's really, as John Piper puts it, it's the happy gospel of the happy God. The gospel is God overflowing his happiness down to humanity. Every time the gospel's preached, every time we gather to worship, God's happiness is spilling over into this world to bathe it and to flood it with his joy. And if you want to study more of that, I would just so heartily recommend to you John Piper's book, called The Pleasures of God. It's a life-changing book for myself. It rescued my life at one point, rescued my ministry. And it's a beautiful thought. This is a God who delights in himself. He delights in his children, as we found out last week. And it just, all the caricatures of God disappear when you really grasp this. This is a God who is so beautiful in his joy and his blessedness and his own delight and happiness. He's not some dark, miserable, sad spoil sport. We adore him. But we also adore him for sharing his happiness with us. For coming to us and saying, I want you, my creatures, to be happy and blessed. I want you to share in my happiness. That he's given us this possibility in this sad world. And it also leads us to hating the devil. It's the devil who hates happiness. The devil gets up every morning, if it can speak like that, and says, how can I make the world miserable and sad and cast down? How can I multiply the tears in this world? How can I break hearts today? That's what motivates him. That's what gives him pleasure. He is miserable and he wants your misery too. And he's seeking you every day to make you miserable. Even though you might be convinced he is the one that seeks your happiness. That's what he tells you. He doesn't come up to you and tell you, I'm going to make you really sad today. No, he says, look, if you do this, you're going to be really happy. How's that working out for you? Why do you keep believing his lies? The pursuit of happiness is not a fundamental human right. It's a fundamental gift of God. And it brings us to love Jesus, because Jesus joins with the Father in his joy mission to the world. You read these words of Jesus, for example, in John chapter 15, verse 11. These things I've spoken to you. Why? Jesus here tells us what motivated him, what his great purpose was, his great aim. These words I've spoken to you, that my joy may be in you, and that your joy may be full. It's astonishing, isn't it? This is God's joy mission, his joy project, his joy plan. That's what salvation is. That's what the gospel is. That's what Wisdom University is all about. That's why verse 17 can say, her ways are pleasant ways and all her paths are peace. Well, okay, God gives this desire for happiness, but does he just leave us hanging there? He gives us the ability, he gives us the desire, but he doesn't actually meet us, connect with us. No, that takes us to our second point. God connects with the desire for happiness. He addresses it. And I want you to notice, first of all, here, God recognizes the desire. He sees into the human heart because he put it there. If he put it there, he connects with it. He walks towards it, not away from it. He doesn't say, well, have this desire for happiness and I want nothing whatsoever to do with it. No, he says, I've given you this and here I am. And I'm going to connect with you here at this point. It's not like we come to God and we say, Lord, I so much want to be happy. And God says to us, well, that's a pretty low motive. That's pretty crummy. That's pretty inferior. That's below me. No, he doesn't. He says, well, let's start with that. Okay, that's what you want to talk about. That's huge in your life. It's huge for me too. Let's discuss. Let's connect in this area. He's not downplaying it. He doesn't denigrate it. He doesn't talk us out of it. No, he sees it's a huge priority in the human life, the human existence, the human heart. And he says, it's a big priority for me too. So he recognizes it. But here's the second thing he does. He ruins it. He ruins it. God approves of the desire for happiness, but he does not approve of the way we usually try and satisfy it. He does not approve of how we usually pursue it. And that's why so much of the Bible's emphasis is on the unhappiness of sin. What's he doing? He's saying, see the ways that you usually try and find this and satisfy this. You've got it all wrong. And you can go back to the fall and the early chapters of Genesis. What's God saying there as the whole thing unravels? He's saying, sin is the way to misery. You look at the whole history of Israel. Why is there so much about this? The ancient nation in the Bible is to show us the unhappiness of sin. You look at the biographies of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Moses and David and Solomon and all of these people. Why are they in the Bible? Partly to show us the unhappiness and the misery of sin. You look at the world that Jesus came to and what he focused on. He focused on the sadness of sin. That's what drew his heart. You look at the New Testament churches and the mess that sin had made of them. You look at this book of Proverbs, and we'll see this, God willing, as we go through it. There must be hundreds of verses in this book which are a basic contrast between the way of wisdom and the way of folly. And again, it's saying the way of folly is the way to misery. You look at this very passage we read, which contrasts the way of wisdom with the way of wealth. And it's saying to us, look, you go down the wealth path, it's got nothing compared to the wisdom path. And so God is taking the things that we usually try and find our happiness in, and he's ruining them. He's saying that kind of happiness is failing, fading, futile. Time and time and time again. Maybe that's what God is doing in our world just now. What's he taken away from us? He's taken away all the things that we usually find happiness in. Our work. Our income, maybe. Our friends. Sport. And maybe it's a huge mercy in that ultimately God is draining these futile sources of happiness to make us to turn to the only true source of happiness. If you read Matthew Henry's commentary on the Bible, six volumes, from beginning to end, it's one long apologetic for the happiness of Christianity. Almost every page, it's on it. Sin is bitter, holiness is sweet. God is good, the devil is bad. The advantages of religion, the disadvantages of irreligion. Over and over and over again. Sin, he's saying, is fatal to happiness. So God recognizes this desire. He ruins this desire, but he also rewards this desire when it's going after the right thing and it's going in the right way. In the link in the list of articles for further reading in the sermon notes, you'll notice I've put an article in there by Kevin DeYoung, and he lists in it 40 motives for pursuing godliness. In fact, I've seen another article of his that I think he just looked at 1 Peter and he found 22 motives for pursuing godliness. And it's a beautiful thing. God doesn't just tell us what to do, but why we should do it. In order to just increase our energy and our desire for the ways of obedience. And that's what we have here in Proverbs as well. Matthew Henry, again, to go back to him, he preached a two-year series on reasons why we should be religious. And it was followed, actually, by another series on reasons why we should not be irreligious. But at the end of his two-year series on reasons for being religious, he preached six sermons on this very text, Proverbs 3:17. And it was eventually sent to the publisher. It was actually the last book he sent to the publisher before he died. It was called The Pleasantness of a Religious Life. And throughout it, he's arguing that true pleasure is found in true piety, and that sin is fatal to happiness. He said, God has designed religion to produce the maximum personal profit and pleasure, and he's argued for this through Solomon in the book of Proverbs. He went on, nothing draws more forcibly than pleasure, and therefore the pleasures of the divine life are unspeakably better than any non-Christian life. If we could persuade people of this, many more would become Christians. And he went to the books of wisdom and he said, you look at Ecclesiastes and there you've got a book dedicated to showing the unhappiness of sin, to prepare the way for Song of Solomon, which shows the supreme happiness of a married relationship with God through Christ. God rewards this. The ways of religion, as verse 17 says, are pleasant ways and peaceful ways. But I want to just give you three quick points here, and we'll unpack these in the coming weeks, God willing. He recognizes this, he ruins this, he rewards it, he redirects it. He redirects the desire for happiness away from self and sin to God and godliness. He doesn't come to us and say, see this desire for happiness? I want you to stop that right now. No, he comes along and he says, I love this desire for happiness. Now, get it in me. Get it in my word. Get it in my wisdom. Get it in my works. Get it in my ways. He redirects it into the right path. Fifthly, he redefines it. And we'll try and build a biblical definition of happiness over coming weeks. And that's very important. We mustn't allow the culture to define happiness. You do a search for happiness in Google, you'll get hundreds of millions of results. That's how many opinions there are about happiness. Well, the Bible has not just opinion, but fact. It's the objective rule for our subjective feelings. It's got to be the standard and the measure to which we bring everything. And we've got to find a definition that's going to be consistent with the Bible, with repentance, with suffering, with self-denial, with discipline. That's hard, but we believe the Bible can provide it. I have some questions about John Piper's Christian hedonism, the idea of the Christian being a pleasure seeker. I agree with it like 90 to 95%, but I don't think he or Matthew Henry adequately deal with suffering. How is that consistent with happiness? Especially you think of the suffering of mental illness. So we'll come back to that. We need to define it. But sixthly and finally, God requires it. You might say, well, you know, happiness, that's not me. I'm just not that kind of person. I'm a wee bit of an Eeyore, not a Tigger. So, you know, I'll leave that to you, optimists. No, It's not an option. This is not something you can opt out of on the basis of personality. God requires this. He says, rejoice in the Lord always. And again I say, rejoice. Psalm 37, delight yourself in God and he'll give you the desire of your heart. It's a command. So, how do we close this? Well, I want to speak just for a minute to the unbeliever maybe listening to this. You're not going to like me very much, but I'm here to ruin your happiness. Insofar as you find it in sinful and ungodly ways. That's what God's called me to do. But it's with a great end of helping you find true, deep, satisfying, lasting, and eternal happiness. That's my great aim. I want to, though, also speak to those who doubt this. In the book of Psalms, in Psalm 4, verse 7, the psalmist, he probably looks back on his ungodly life and he says, you filled my heart with greater joy than when their grain and new wine abounded. What's the psalmist doing here? He's saying, let's have a competition. Let's have a happiness competition. I want you to bring all your parties, all your sinful pleasures, and I want you to bring the best of them, and I want you to compare them with mine. And I'll tell you this, because I've been there. The joy God gives is far superior than these. Let's have a joy competition. Let's compare and contrast. And won't you give this a try? Haven't you tried long enough the other way and found it wanting and lacking? Is it not worth looking at this more seriously, more prayerfully, believingly? Read that verse again. Her ways are pleasant ways, and all her paths are peace. God doesn't come to you and say, stop wanting happiness. He says, get it in me, be glutted. Let your desire for happiness be glutted in me. Why does God require happiness of us as Christians? Well, number one, because it makes us strong. The joy of the Lord is your strength. Number two, it makes us good apologists and evangelists. We hardly need to speak if we can project the happiness of being a Christian. And thirdly, as John Piper said, God is most glorified in us when we are most satisfied in him. So, don't be ashamed of the rewards God promises in the Bible. It's not something lower, like that's for many Christians or, you know, worldly Christians. No, it's for all Christians. We all need these motivations. The theologian Berkauer said, we have reason to be thankful that our confessions do not hesitate to speak freely about the promised rewards. He noted how many times the Heidelberg Catechism asks about the profit of numerous truths and said that the Catechism is warmly concerned about the profit and benefits of faith. He insists that the idea of reward is confirmed in the Bible as an integral element in the preaching of the gospel. John Piper pointed to the Heidelberg Catechism and he said this, the whole catechism is placed under the human longing for comfort, and the entire catechism is an answer to the concern for how to live and die happily. God gave the desire for happiness. God connects with the desire for happiness. And God, as we'll see, can satisfy it. But as Calvin said, the secret of happiness is that it's necessary for us to go outside of ourselves to find it. So bring your desire for happiness to God. And you'll be surprised beyond your imagining at how God can make you happy in Christ.